Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia.
Today, Sonia, we are in the world of X-Men Evolution, Season 2, Episode 10, an episode called Mind Bender. Mm-hmm. But before we begin bending our minds, let's get the plugs out of the way. Mm-hmm. You can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group on Facebook. Rate review the show 5 stars on iTunes or any podcast service you use. We really appreciate support there. And also, you can follow us on Twitch now. Twitch.tv/Willie8911. Stay tuned for future broadcasts there. We'll probably tool around with some old Marvel games or just hang out to chat. It's why it's important to join the Facebook group so you get those notifications as well, although maybe I'll put them on Twitter too, but whatever. Facebook group's where it's at. Twitch is the future. Now, before we start talking about this episode, I did want to mention a couple of things. One, we did successfully move apartments, mm-hmm. which is exciting for us. We now go from a studio bedroom to multiple rooms, mm-hmm. like almost like real adults.
It does mean that our sound quality is different in here, so we got to tweak a little and see how that goes.
Right, we might be playing around, so some podcasts might sound a little better than others. I don't know. Let's hopefully this one sounds good, and then that's not too much of a concern. But other than that, though, we're not next to the highway anymore.
Woohoo!
So we did a test podcast before, and of course there's a bunch of sirens going down the street. So nothing we can do about that. But anyway, we're excited to have moved. We're a little tired and bruised from lifting stuff, but otherwise very happy. We saw 7 episodes of Season 3 of Cobra Kai. Mm-hmm. Which I think we got quite sucked into.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody else has been watching that, but I think, I don't know, you probably have to have seen the Karate Kid movies, like the original trilogy of them, to fully appreciate this show.
You're not including Karate Kid 4 with Hilary Swank?
I am not.
But she's in the universe. She could come back.
With that disclaimer, I think it's safe to say that this is an enjoyable series to watch. Season 1 was good. Season 2 was a little worse. Season 3 is back to form.
Yeah.
In all the great, like, teen angst and rage ways possible.
I feel like the teen angst and rage is very realistic in the show. Their outlet for it is the fantasy element. The fact that they're all black belt karate masters pummeling each other to bloody pulps.
Right.
That's a little disconcerting, but it's so well done that...
But it's also, I like the way they set the stakes, because it's not so low that you don't care, but it's not so high that it's, like, hyper-unrealistic. They are kind of grounded in the real world in some ways.
Yeah. And I want to say, too, that I love Ralph Macchio. I love that he's a Mets fan. I love that he's just seemingly a real, genuine, happy guy who's humble, and I don't know, there's just something about him that's very easy to root for. He reminds me of Mark Hamill. And his career is similar, too.
Yeah, I could see that. Well, he didn't get into, like, voiceover acting and all that stuff, but...
Yeah, not that I know of.
Yeah, not that I know of.
He might have done some things here and there, but he's a cool dude. But the guy who steals the show consistently is William Zabka, who plays Johnny Lawrence.
Yeah, he's great.
He's just funny in everything he does and says, and they give him a lot of corny stuff to do, but...
It's like he knows that it's corny, and the way he delivers it, it's not that it's disingenuous, but he lets you laugh at it a little bit. It's nice. I like it.
I like also about him that I feel he's just the truest to the premise of the show, which is what happens to a 1980s Hollywood movie bully, mm-hmm. 35 years later. And it's not like he's giving a realistic performance. He's giving the most accurate performance to that fantasy concept.
Right.
Which it just exists.
He maintains the universe very
right.
well.
Right, yeah. He's like the heart of the universe. It's a lot of fun. That guy, it's cool that guy is getting some later life success, because he's another guy, too, who's like a young 80s actor that was in a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. a lot of sort of memorable 80s movies, playing the same type of, you know, prick, preppy, blonde guy mm-hmm. that you just hated. And it's just funny that he's getting a chance to reprise that role, but put a spin on it. You know, there's something about the 1980s in general that it was so, it's just so much in everyone, in our generation and older's minds about that decade of the movies, the music. It's all just, it all warped us and built us up in some weird way, all the good and the bad, you know. And he's one of those, like, fantasy figures of popular imagination. And I don't know, it's just kind of there's something satisfying about him getting a chance to like exist again in the public imagination. So yeah, really enjoying Karate Kid season 3 for sure. Very excited how it's going to conclude. We only got 3 episodes to go. But with all that said, I do want to move on to the latest episode of Evolution here. Like we said before, the episode is called Mindbender.
This was a good episode. I liked it.
I liked it too. It's another mystery episode.
Yeah, which they seem to do pretty well.
Yes, right. When they don't tell you everything that's happening and they leave some surprises for the end.
But it's not done in a way that's confusing. They give you the information that you need to follow the story for the most part.
But, and it's also fun too, because there's a lot to nitpick, and the nitpicking is a lot of fun.
Part of the joy.
Definitely part of the joy. You know, because it's the context of the X-Men, so.
Right.
It's always interesting to see an interpretation. All right. How does this episode begin?
Okay, well, we start with Jean. She's barefooted in her pajamas, so we know that she's dreaming most likely right away.
Right, it's a dream.
At a creepy carnival at night, it's raining, and like these scary laughing clowns keep
10-foot tall clowns are chasing her,
popping up and chasing her. It's frightening.
Were you afraid of clowns as a child?
I'm told that I was. I don't really remember being scared of them, honestly, but my parents have told me that they brought me to the circus when I was maybe like 2 or 3 years old, and I caught sight of the clowns and just screamed, and they had to like carry me out of there. So I wouldn't stop screaming. So that would indicate that I was afraid. But I mean, they took me back to the circus later on when I was maybe like 8 or 9 or something, and at that point I wasn't scared of the clowns. And I think it's a really common phobia that people have of clowns.
That's what I wanted to ask.
And I don't like them in particular, but I also don't have the clown phobia, so...
I mean, I think for me as a kid, it was more of a circus phobia. I mean, but not even real. I mean, I went to the circus several times. My parents would take me to the Big Apple Circus. And I remember being, you know, these are ages like 4 to 7. I don't know. I remember being overwhelmed because at the circus, it's smelly. you know, there's like elephants and there's... it's just... It's like almost outdoors in a weird way because it's in a tent. And, I mean, there's aspects...
So that's scary?
No, I'm just saying, it's like, it's an unusual atmosphere. It's because it's dark and dingy, too. I remember that.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. And it was a very memorable experience. So the experience really sticks with you as a kid. I remember, like, for instance, I remember we bought a koosh ball, those bouncy koosh balls with the frilly rubber ball. Right. Yeah. I remember we got that thing, and I literally had it for at least 33 years of my life. It would go from one desk to another as I moved throughout my life. In college, after college, it was just in the back of a drawer. And you know, it got increasingly, like, it was a bright purple-pink ball initially that it got, like...
It's, like, all bleached out. It's now just the color of, like, an eraser or something.
Yeah, it got grosser over the... And then at some point, I finally threw it away. I was like, why do I still have this fucking thing?
To remind you of your good time at the circus.
Well, it wasn't such a... I'd say it was a mixed bag. Like, I enjoyed the clownery of the clowns. I thought it was impressive to see them do their feats. But I was nervous that the clowns would interact with me, which I saw them doing. And throughout the show, they'd go up to some kids and put them in the act. I was absolutely terrified of them coming to me and asking me to do something.
Yeah, I wouldn't be into it either.
I was mentally rehearsing, like, how can I get out of this? And so I was just gripping onto my bench platform.
Such a funny thing, because I feel like in the world of theater or theatrical performances in general, it's encouraged to interact with the audience and kind of bring the audience in as much as possible so that it's not just a spectator sport. It's more like...
Well, did they not realize that so many people have social anxiety and all this
like
stuff?
And like stage fright and like really want no part of it.
Yeah, they just want to sit back and try to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit is always a field of terror if you're ever at the endless plays you go to as a kid for school. Like the characters in the historical drama start talking to the audience. You, young sir!
Right. Deer in the head. Headlights, I'm like,
what shall I do? You know, it's all this bullshit. Or they come running out into the aisles and want people to stand up and clap or dance
or something.
I never liked that stuff.
No, thank you.
But yeah, so I mean, my last thing I'll say about clowns, which is just a weird memory of adding to the bizarre psychological nature of how they stick with you, is during one of the stage breaks or something, my mother got into a casual conversation with one of the clowns who was just sort of like almost bent. I had this weird memory of him bent over the side of the railing. He wasn't smoking a cigarette, but he might as well have been, like, because he was completely normal. He dropped character. Uh-huh. And my mother's just having this most inane adult-level conversation with him about, I don't know, about what, like the traffic or Social Security or something. And I just had this weird memory of my mother talking to this clown in their adult, like, language, as I'd see her talking the phone or something to a friend. Uh-huh. And that just, I didn't like that either. And I just wonder if, like, taking your kids to the circus is just some kind of weird litmus test for children. And it's somewhat, like, I would be aware that if we had kids, we have nieces and nephews, if it came up, like, let's take them to the circus, I would think twice about it. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't be like, yeah, that's a great idea. Because I know what it's like as a kid where the circus is kind of, it could be a scary thing. And I don't know if...
Circuses are different now than they used to be, though. Like, a lot of them kind of cut down on the animal acts because of all the animal cruelty, which is a good thing.
They're more du-soleil. Did I say that right? Du-soleil? I don't know.
Like Cirque du Soleil, you mean?
Right, yeah, Cirque du Soleil, yeah.
Right, there's more, like, contortionist acts and, like, high wire.
Right, I mean, I like that stuff.
Yeah, I like that stuff, too. That's
right.
Cool.
Yeah, but I don't know. The circus is kind of it's part... like tradition in a way, so I don't want to say it's bad or like kids shouldn't see it, but it's also, what's with all this like clown horror in pop culture? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to figure out where the clown horror comes from, because it's definitely a very common thing that people are afraid of.
Some of it's like there's that serial killer from the 70s or 60s or something that was dressed as a clown, and they've done psychological profiles of him, like, you know, a clown makes his own makeup. Mm-hmm. That reflects their personality.
Right.
And he was one of the few clowns that had really pointed eyebrows at like nasty angles.
Uh-huh.
And they say that most clowns have very rounded eyebrow paint.
Right.
And that to have this pointed one, it's like demonic I don't know. But like they did all these studies. It's out there, all this sort of like clown.
Interesting. Well, I mean, insanity. It's even like adopted so much into pop culture.
Right.
It's the Joker.
Cliche.
You know?
Right. Yeah, the Joker, right. He's the most famous, terrifying clown there is.
I guess.
Well, right. I mean, because in a weird way, there's like phases of the Joker throughout the last 80 years of pop culture where he's almost just like a goofy, you know, Cesar Romero type. He's not scary. He's
Yeah, but there's
silly.
Plenty of iterations where he is scary.
Right, he's murderous, like the Joaquin Phoenix one.
Yeah.
So there's something about those clowns. I don't know if I can trust them, but I'm not entirely anti-clown. But Jean is being haunted by clowns.
Jean absolutely does not trust them.
Yeah.
It turns out it is a dream. She wakes up in her pajamas levitating over her bed, and there's a jack-in-the-box at her bedside table.
Right. So she opens, again, the jack-in-the-box, another, like, demented clown troll toy.
Right.
This is maybe why people are afraid of clowns, is because jack-in-the-boxes.
Is it always a clown face?
No, it's a lot of random stuff. Like, I've seen puppies, for instance, like, much more kid-friendly things pop out of there.
Yeah. But it's like, the whole thing is the element of surprise with a jack-in-the-box.
It's like, just such a weird toy. It's like, it seems like a 19th century, and who knows what it dates back to. I'm sure you could look it up. But it seems like a 19th century toy when they're inventing a lot of mechanical toys at the time and objects. And it's more about, like, to me it just seems like the inventor's like, oh, I've made this clever contraption.
Mm-hmm.
Versus this being a solid piece of entertainment for a child. I don't know. Is the goal to scare children with a jack-in-the-box or to delight them in some way?
Maybe it's... I mean, I guess you do get like a momentary little like startle when it pops out. But then I think some of it also is like the predictability, right? Like the kid knows that it's going to happen. So it's like anticipation and then a payoff.
It's kind of like random each time when you're cranking it.
Is it always random?
I think so. I think it's on. I think it could pop at any point in the music more or less. Like sometimes you have to spin it more than to reset it probably. But what the fuck? I don't know.
Anyway.
They're also somehow they've become like a cliched horror element to Jack in the Box.
Right.
Jean is brainwashed. It turns out by this evil mutant character named Mesmero.
It's his face that's inside her jack-in-the-box.
Right, and he kind of looks like Professor X. He's a bald white guy.
But he has, like, Darth Maul makeup on or something.
There are tattoos on his face.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, like, his power is hypnotism as a mutant, which I like the shades of different types of psychics in the X-Men world. It never quite makes sense because it seems like they should all have the same power. Like, for instance, Mastermind's power is to project realistic illusions.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of like Professor X could do that, probably.
He just doesn't use it that much.
Or, right. I mean, but the point is, like, he's got the power of Mastermind. It's like, what's the difference between him and Mastermind and Mesmero, who's a hypnotist? Like, Professor X could hypnotize people.
Right.
Jean Grey technically should have all these powers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Also, weird that Jean Grey is psychic, gets, like, her brain hijacked in this episode. I guess, you know, she's not a master psychic yet.
Mm.
But still, I mean, you know, in fact, I take that back in the sense that Jean Grey, she gets tricked by Mastermind. That's the whole Phoenix plot.
Right.
And from the comics, anyway, or the original X-Men cartoon, is that he projects this whole fantasy that she's like a medieval pirate queen or something, or not a medieval, like an Enlightenment era pirate queen, and she falls in love with Jason Wingard, I believe his fake name is Mastermind, and it's a whole thing. So, again, like, not sure why Jean is so susceptible to these psychic attacks, but I do, like I said, I do like all these different types of weird psychic characters in the X-Men universe. Shadow King's another one.
Maybe it's like a double-edged sword sort of thing where, like, if you have psychic abilities, then you're more susceptible to someone else with psychic
the door's left open.
Something, I don't know.
I don't know either. So the editing is weird in this episode. So Jean floats away. Then we just cut starkly to the next day. The X-Men are already in full panic mode looking for her. They've just declared that she's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all out on the hunt trying to find Jean Grey.
Right. Scott is driving and dialing on his cell phone at the same time. Very dangerous, Scott.
His little Corvette convertible.
Yeah. He's calling up all Jean's friends to see if they've seen her.
I gotta say, I don't like his car. I've seen enough of the car now. They put him in the car so much. He just looks like a Ken doll strapped in a toy car driving around.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like he's in a real car. There's just something about the car that doesn't work to me.
Was there a whole, like, toy marketing scheme going on with this show, too?
I mean, all these cartoons exist to sell toys.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all superhero shit to this day exists to sell toys and video games and cards and comic books. Star Wars, like, it's all still just about the merchandising is the sweetest plum,
mm-hmm.
as Krusty the Clown said. The t-shirt sales, they're the sweetest plum.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if you could get an X-Men Evolution Cyclops in his car. But I just don't like the way it looks. He looks too big for the car. It just looks fake. It looks like a wind-up car in the show. That's a little nitpick of mine.
Meanwhile, Kitty is at the Brotherhood of Bayville boarding house asking Avalanche and company if they've seen Jean. They throw her out because they think she's accusing them of kidnapping Jean.
Yeah.
She's not. She's genuinely just looking for her. And, you know, all the X-Men are doing their part to try to find Jean. Except the New Mutant kids are
up to mischief again.
Class just on their own. There's no instructors present because they're all out looking for Jean. And one of them is like, oh, maybe we should go look for Jean too as part of like the effort with the school. And they're like, nah, let's just go to the danger room. We'll have our own class.
I really like these New Mutant characters because they're just wacky and insane. And they're sort of totally unruly.
Yeah.
And I kind of almost prefer them to the main cast of boring characters that we've gotten because they're so different. I just like them as an element on the show. So this group, it's the typical group. It's Jubilee, Iceman, Cannonball, and we see Multiple Man, who's, I guess, Multiple Boy.
They just call him Multiple.
Which I don't like at all.
Because he's not a man yet.
That's fine, I guess. Well, Spider-Man wasn't a man when he became Spider-Man.
Well.
He was Spider-Teenage Boy as well. but we get another character's name, though. A Berserker, we learn, is on this team. Like, they still haven't fully said the names of all these characters out loud, which baffles me.
I kind of wish they would, like, introduce them properly. But it's okay, we're piecing it together.
Right. I'm still pretty certain they haven't said Jubilee's name out loud.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, they might have. I don't know. But anyway, Berserker is this other character we've seen. He's got a weird haircut. His real name is Ray Crisp. I mean, I don't really know much about this X-Man. But he's got electricity powers.
Mm-hmm.
And he supposedly, his powers don't work when he's wet. Which, I don't know how realistic that is to...
Because water is a very good conductor of electricity.
Would he be electrocuting himself, though? Is that why he can't do it?
Oh.
I don't know. But it's good to have another X-Man named, at the very least. And so they get into some mischief in the danger room. They're...
This is like a
short... Bite off more than they can chew.
Yeah, it's just a short B-plot with them, which I kind of liked in this episode to go back and forth between like the main X-Men and these guys.
Sometimes they screw it up with this B-plot of New Mutants. It sticks out like a sore thumb.
Usually they just spend so much time cutting back and forth. Like, I wish they would just stick with one story for a little bit longer. But in this episode, they only go back and forth like a couple few times.
Yeah, it was just enough.
So, I mean, basically the B-plot is that these kids do get into the Danger Room, but they don't let Multiple come with them because he's too young and inexperienced as a mutant, they say. So they go into the Danger Room. They have to, like, use their powers as a team to overcome the obstacles. They do it, and then even harder and more dangerous, whatever, obstacles come their way. Turns out that Multiple was the one that was controlling it and making it, like, impossible for them. But they succeed, then they find out that it was him, then they're like, let's get him! But they're all too tired from their exercise in the Danger Room.
It was kind of a funny joke. We'll get him tomorrow.
Yeah, it was cute.
I do think it's funny that you've embraced this version of the character by calling him Multiple. I can't do that. I can't make that leap.
That's what they call him.
I know. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just saying I don't like that they've tried to short circuit the fact that he's not a man yet by lopping off that part of his name.
Right.
But I do like that character, though. Rest in peace, the James Franco Multiple Man movie that was supposed to happen. Mm. James Franco's career, I guess, went down in flames. And also the whole Fox Disney transfer. Uh-huh. So we were supposed to get Multiple Man, a Kitty Pryde movie, and a Gambit movie, all never materialized.
Yet.
Well, I don't think they ever will. I think Disney's got its own thing.
I guess that's true.
I don't think...
I would like to see those characters in movies at some point.
Oh, yeah, though, definitely. But... Absolutely. Gambit especially. And
even as standalone movies, those all three would be great,
I think. Well, I think so. I want a Gambit Disney Plus show.
I know you do.
That to me is like the perfect... 6 to 8 episodes of Gambit on the mean streets of New Orleans.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Or in the back bayous there. I think that'd be great. A lot of fun. A lot of, like... He's just got, like... He's violent, but he's not, like, bloodthirsty violent like Wolverine, where he slashes people.
Yeah.
There's a way that it would just...
He has, like a little finesse.
Yeah, slide in nicely with the whole thing. I think
we'll just keep putting it out there into the airwaves, and hopefully we'll get a return on it at some point.
Yeah. So where were we? Jean, she's been brainwashed. This Mesmero guy has her basically going up and down the United States, like robbing jewelry of rings.
Three rings, right. Specifically.
Yeah.
I don't like... Well, whatever, this is not a real criticism, but they don't name Mesmero until, like, a good way into the episode. And because the episode is called Mindbender, I was like... Who is the mind bender here?
So many candidates.
Many candidates. But, right. Anyway, so back at the X-Mansion, Beast does, like, a bunch of research to try to figure out what the pattern is with the rings that are being stolen, because it's in the news, so he can look it up.
It was a scene pulled entirely out of Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm.
He's got one of those... First of all, he's in a basement somewhere. He's got a... oversized computer screen, verticalized computer screen, where he's scrolling through scanned newspaper articles. What do they call that?
Like microfiche?
Yeah, microfiche. And they're scanning like really fast, like 20 miles per hour on his screen. And as he's supposedly absorbing this information, he's typing as fast as possible.
Like a speed reader or something.
A speed reader, speed typist. Like, you have no idea what he's doing.
It's like shorthand for Beast is really smart.
It is, but I just think that's funny. You see that a lot in these shows before the internet was more actualized as a usable thing. Like this predates Google being the default search engine in general, where like that's how you look up information. You type it into a box, you ask a question, or you just put in a phrase, and then you get a list of articles that you pick from. I liked how all these science fiction writers, before search engines existed as a universalized concept, it's what you get here, where Beast is like, there's newspaper screens flying by, and he's just typing madly.
Yeah.
You know, and you see that sort of hacking in, you know, like, I'm just, like, weird science is when they're sort of, like, hacking on.
Or hackers.
Right, hackers too, obviously. Where it's just, like, there's insane text, like, almost in 3D flying across your screen, like, well beyond the technology that existed at the time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, a skeleton, I better, like, navigate around it, or else I'll get a worm troll, you know, virus.
Right.
And it's like, oh, good, I avoided it. It's almost like this weird game you're playing at the same time. I think that all that stuff is silly, and I do sort of miss it in a way. Although I guess, like, even in modern TV and movies, they still have, like, absurd hacking
sequences. The guy in the chair's job.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the thing is, like, in real life, computer hacking is just like programming. It's very banal.
Yeah.
You're just typing in some code or whatever, and
yeah,
using a few programs, and you're just waiting for the screen to, like, say, like, you know, get in or out. It's not like there's all this, like, animated
right
energy.
No gimmicks with it.
Right.
You wish there were gimmicks.
Right, yeah. I mean, we have to watch that show, iRobot. I think that's all about, like, modern hacking. They supposedly, it's supposedly a good show, and they supposedly do a good job of, like, showing what real hacking is all about.
Okay.
Rami Malek.
Cool.
So,
meanwhile, yeah. Jean, the things that Beast is reading about is that on her first heist, it's just her, and, you know, she's brainwashed, but she goes into a museum in Boston and steals, like, a shiny gem ring. And then she takes the... Then she goes back to the X-Mansion. She's stolen the X-Jet to do all this business, but it doesn't come up on Professor X's radar.
Nothing comes up. His security system is so crappy.
Yeah.
Jean, she enters through the main gate, and even though the robot's like, welcome, Jean Grey, like, no, there's no alert back at the home base that Jean is on the premises.
Right, they're all looking for her.
And like you said, the plane, like, lands and takes off three times from the mansion. There's no alerts that go off. We saw that in the previous episodes too, where the New Mutants steal the plane,
uh-huh,
and nobody seems to know until it's too late.
Yeah.
Like, why are they not...
You'd think there'd be some kind of security protocol.
I mean, they
with
show
a jet.
They show all these security. They show cameras all the time that people are blowing up. And
yeah.
Like, all... It's just... I mean, I know, I get it. It's like the narrative needs to not be consistent there because they're just trying to tell their dumb story.
Right.
But I don't know. I think there's a way to keep things logically consistent and get around Professor... But the point is, like, the only conclusion I'm left with is that Professor X's security is super bad. Him and
Could
Beast
be.
Need to step up the game.
Okay, so after the first ring heist, Jean brings the X-Jet back. She goes into Nightcrawler's room and hypnotizes him in the middle of the night. This is really cool.
Right, so, yeah, it looks good because Nightcrawler just wakes up wordlessly. Jean doesn't say a word. Jean doesn't really even say a word throughout this whole episode.
Yeah, I don't know if she has any lines, really.
Right, they just wordlessly look at each other. He's brainwashed now. It ends up happening a few more times. They end up getting Spike and Kitty, too.
Mm-hmm. So, three times total.
Right.
And she gets the three rings.
I gotta say, too, that Jean is very ultra-powered in this episode,
mm-hmm,
which is sort of unusual for her character. Across,
I know, she doesn't faint even once.
Doesn't
she?
Faint. Like, she casually knocks a few police cars into some trees. She easily defeats Wolverine and Cyclops when they try to stop her at a bank heist.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, this is...
This is cool. I wish
this is the logical,
like,
thing you would think with the power of Jean Grey, that
yeah,
she's good. She's not useless in a fight.
Right.
And, like, most of the time, she's struggling really hard to concentrate to lift stuff. And
right.
So here, they're just... Maybe she just needs to be really focused. Like, have her completely blank mind to do her powers.
Be brainwashed, basically.
Right.
And use her powers.
Yeah.
So, right. So each time when she, like, abducts one or two more X-Men to help her with the next heist, she gets them to use their powers to her
help
advantage. And ultimately, like, Beast has been tracking all this stuff and knows what she's doing. But, like, they don't catch up with her, really. Even the third time when she comes back to abduct Kitty and Spike, none of the alarms go off, nothing. But Professor X uses Cerebro, I guess, to look into Jean's mind when he finally realizes that she's, like, around or something. And he sees Mesmero's face in her subconscious or something. And he recognizes Mesmero. And he's like, oh, Mesmero's behind this. Okay, got it.
Professor X seems to know a lot of psychics out there in the world.
I guess.
Because he knows, like, the Shadow
sense,
King,
right?
Is, like, another one of his foes that predates the X-Men.
Right. I love this piece of technology that he has where he has Cerebro hooked up onto his head. And he gets, like, a computer visualization from his brain, like,
yeah,
onto the screen.
Yeah, that seems
Mesmero's
like a Professor
face.
X technology.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder if one day they're ever really going to be able to interpret brain waves and capture the imagery. I mean, as I said, that'll be the most amazing piece of technology, and also, like, a real foreboding of the end of the human race, too.
the fact that
they'll be able to see your thoughts in a visual form is probably not a good...
Kind of disturbing.
The last invasion of privacy.
Maybe. I just think it's, like, so much of the time when you see the X-Men or other whatever superhero stuff that you see, all the technology, it gets outdated so quickly. Like, even, I don't know, like, one of the marks of the future is, like, video phones or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is seen in so much media as, like, this is the future. It's so hyper-futuristic. But now it's, like, everybody just has FaceTime, so...
Right. And it's kind of, it's kind of like, even though it is really impressive, it's also kind of crappy in a way. The FaceTime. Just like, there's something.
What?
I'm just saying that, like, it's a thing that, like, it was this future thing that seemed really impressive for decades. Where it's like, one day we'll be able to look at someone's face on a phone and communicate back in real time.
Yeah.
But in practice, there's something, it's like a little bit of a letdown.
Is it because it's just so ubiquitous now?
I don't know what it is. It's just, it's, maybe that's it. Maybe that it's, there's an ordinariness to it that it's not as exciting. Because I guess maybe in the context of all these movies, if you had a video phone, something truly exciting was happening. And these are really cool, sexy people that had them and were doing things in the future.
Right. And they always have, like, some kind of chic background. Like,
instead, like, people are, like, FaceTiming from Burger King, talking to their friend. And it's just, like, pointless and kind of annoying.
I guess. But anyway, this, like, mind reader visualizer program that Professor X has is, like, really awesome. I like seeing that. Okay. Anyways, so Beast's research eventually leads them back to the circus, right? Because Jubilee... Oh, and the Mesmero picture. Because, no, not Jubilee. Rogue sees that, like, image on Professor X's
and she
X's
connects
screen.
That Mesmero is at the circus they'd visited recently.
Right. This was, like, a late tie-in, I thought, because in the dream sequence when Jean is going through that creepy carnival, you think, like, oh, it's just some
right.
nightmare.
Someone's
that her
invaded
brain made
her
up.
Brain, yeah.
But no, like, they go to the carnival.
They had been to a carnival that they mentioned, like, that you never had seen before.
Right.
Unless I'm totally forgetting some episode. But the point is, that
it's just a real place.
It's just some, like, weird, like, the script just, like, mentions it sort of after
the fact.
I don't know,
that felt like a letdown to me, but it did. Anyway, they go there. And it's basically becomes a face-off between, like, Jean's hypnotized team. It's Jean, Kurt, Kitty, and Spike versus the rest of the X-Men that come in the jet. So it's Professor X, Beast, Wolverine, Cyclops, Rogue.
I like the matchup of Beast versus Nightcrawler because they're sort of evenly matched in a way. They're both very athletic blue people that can stick to walls mm-hmm. and jump around. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The one matchup I didn't like was Spike versus Rogue. Because they let you see that Rogue is a master ninja gymnast.
Right. She's just kind of, like, flipping all over the place to avoid his spikes. She can't really use her powers against him.
But she's really good at flipping. Like, she's like Neo from The Matrix. The way she could just dodge these, you know, 100-mile-per-hour thrown spikes or whatever they are.
Right.
And it's just... It just makes me... to me, it's almost more realistic that Rogue would be super strong, could fly, than that she would be so good at being a gymnast that she could
dodge
flying knives.
Well, because you never see her,
like,
training. Like, presumably they all do that in the danger room all the time.
Yeah, but I mean,
but then, like, all of them should be that good at it.
They might be.
I guess. I don't know. I see what you mean. Something a little inconsistent about it.
It's inconsistent. It's just the Rogue is just too... it's just the way they have to sort of...
Like, give her other stuff to do.
Yeah, you can feel, like, the weight. It's just so much more pleasing when she's super strong, can fly, and she's there to fight, like, a big tank, a flying tank.
Mm.
And, you know, she gets beat up a lot, obviously, even in that form, but it's exciting. There's something, you know.
Right.
You see what the limits of her power is, and then you also see how strong she is, too. Here, it's almost like I am worried for Rogue in these scenes because she's so vulnerable, but I'm annoyed that I'm worried. And that's how I felt with Anna Paquin's version, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is, like, she's wimpy to have on the team.
Right. Until she does actually use her power, which she does here. She absorbs Jean's powers a little bit.
Right.
And then she is superpowered because she has the telekinesis.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's...
The strong version.
Not what I care about.
She uses it.
I mean, I just saw Jean have those powers.
Yeah,
it's not exciting for me to now see Rogue have them.
I'm with you.
So, anyway... the X-Men fight each other. Eventually, they find Mesmero under a tent somewhere, and he has a square-off psychic fight with Professor X.
Mm-hmm.
I was a little let down here, too, because in the original series, you get Professor X go into, like, the astral projection plane to fight, where he wears a ridiculous, like, samurai costume, and where they become chess pieces on a board, all this, like, fun stuff. Or at least you get the psychic energy, the blue energy around his bald head flying around like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's just two guys closing their eyes trying to concentrate and dramatic, like, zoom-ins on their eyeballs and stuff.
Uh-huh.
A more realistic take, I guess, but less fun for a cartoon, in my opinion.
Right.
Anyway, Professor X is surprisingly bested, and he remarks that Mesmero is yet a puppet, too. There's some other psychic force much stronger.
Right, so the same way that Jean was being used, Mesmero is just being used. It's not really coming from him.
And then, despite all these nitpicks, like I said, the episode is good. Like, I was like, oh, who is the other psychic force?
Yeah.
It turns out to be Apocalypse. So Mesmero's plan was he gathered these rings and he puts them on a golden staff, and then he's able to use it as a key to unlock some magical door in the Himalayas or something. And he's like, soon apocalypse, I'll get the other keys I need to open door number two.
Right.
And despite the ridiculousness of that, like, I am excited to see their take on Apocalypse. I hope it's a little better than Magneto, who I was a little let down by in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like the idea, too, of Apocalypse being a psychic force. They did that in the movie.
Yeah.
I just think he's more of what you see in the original cartoon. He's this big, shape-shifting metal man that's got laser powers and is immortal.
Mm-hmm.
That more so than he is a...
Like a psychic entity.
Right. Like, I remember in the whole Beyond Good and Evil plotline, he has to kidnap all the universe's psychics to power his time machine thing. He himself can't do it. So, I mean, I get it. Like, Apocalypse's power set is kind of undefined in a way because he's so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever. We'll see what it's like.
I'm excited to see him. Right. I like what they did with Mesmero here, where it was kind of like a bait and switch sort of thing.
He's in the Mystique role.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
Like, the ending was like a nice twist.
Looking forward to see.
That I didn't, like, see coming.
Yeah. I didn't like another scene was Kitty Pryde kicks Wolverine in the shins, and he's in pain for, like, 10 minutes.
He like brings out his claws against her. Uh-huh. And then he's like, kid, I can't like actually do this like against you.
Mm-hmm.
And like puts his claws away again, and yeah, she
just kicks him in the shin once and he falls over
away.
In pain. Yeah, he runs away. And he's smarting over it minutes, like at least 10 minutes later. And I'm like, wait, first of all, you got adamantium bones, you're super strong, you've got a healing factor.
Yeah, but he has like nerve cells just like everybody else in his leg.
One kick to his shin I think would have
that
healed
really
within.
Hurt. You ever stub your toe?
If he can get shot in the head and heal within 1 minute,
yeah.
Then a kick to the shins should literally
be like an instantaneous heal.
That's some stupid stuff.
I mean, that's fine, but like that's kind of part of the fun of watching any type of X-Men content.
Yeah,
right,
you're right. Yeah, this all like delights us in a weird way. We've gone from, like, at first we were actively against the show because of all these things, but now
yeah.
We've come around the bend and we like the show because of these things and just sort of swept along with just, like we said originally, like, it's fun to enjoy the X-Men. That's,
yes.
That's all it comes down to.
Yes.
And this episode wasn't half bad. It was decent.
Yeah, I liked it.
So, that's kind of all I have for this one. Do you have any final thoughts before we go here?
No, I don't think so. I hope our sound quality is going to be okay in here.
Well, if it's not, we'll keep playing with it until we get it right. But we appreciate everyone for listening again. We thank you all. In another new year, another
yeah.
new decade is unfolding. Hopefully, the first year was bad. Let's hope the second shot of the 2020s is better.
Yep.
It's cool that we're finally in a decade where it's the 20s.
The 20s again, I know.
We're not in some, like, amorphous 2000 to 2019 where you don't know what to call it.
Well, it's aughts and teens.
Yeah, but no,
I don't like talking about aughts for some reason.
No, it's all. I hate that word.
Yeah.
Complete bullshit. I would have called it the zeros.
Me too.
But again, that's also kind of stupid. It's not fully descriptive of...
The O's?
The point is, when we grew up in the 80s and 90s, those decades made sense in so many ways of just referring to... time like that.
Uh-huh.
What were the 60s like? What were the 50s like?
Yeah.
Remember back to the 80s? Like, just all that way it's discussed and understood, and the decades were clean and concise. They're different styles, times,
right. Each
historic
decade had
events.
Its own flavor, kind of, in the 1900s. Do you think it was like that in the 1800s or the 1700s, where people would be like, oh, that style is so 70s, but they mean like 1770s?
It feels like a modern concept that arose in the late 19th century more than anything.
Because, like, time moves faster or fashion trends move faster.
I mean,
like...
I've definitely read literature where characters in the books talked about, like, let's say if it was in the 1700s, they'd talk about, like, oh, back in the 60s.
Right.
And they were referring to the 1760s. Like, I've seen that. So, but I don't know what it meant to them contextually.
That's what I mean. It's like, it makes sense to refer to the year in that way, but does it refer also to a specific, like, moment in culture by decade, like it does in the 1900s? That's what I wonder.
I wonder that, too. I don't know. But, the 2020s have sucked thus far, but at least we're in an actual decade we can name and categorize and think about more coherently than the amorphous time of 2000 to 2019,
right.
Which was just this big blah of, like, time, culture.
Like most of our lives.
Most of our, yeah. The majority of our lives that have existed in this time has just been a big sort of letdown in a lot of ways. Like the 90s was all about amping up for the new millennium. Uh-huh. It was all about building up that hype. 2000, what a year.
Right. And then there was a little twinge of fear because Y2K.
Right. But you get over that quickly.
And then like nothing really happened.
Well, I mean, there was 9/11 and then like everything was really shitty in a sense. Yes. Like it's been in the shadow of that terrorist attack.
No, but I mean like
at least
from an
American
part
perspective.
Of it, there wasn't like a whole lot of payoff for the excitement is what I mean.
Oh, yeah, absolutely not. And we, like we said, we've gotten a lot of stuff like FaceTime on cell phones.
Yeah, we have video time.
But I don't
care. That's great.
That's not making me feel like I'm in the Jetsons so much. I don't know why.
You need your flying car. That's why.
Do I? You think
to feel like you're fully in the future? I mean,
I think I need more of a like an underwater bubble house or something. You know, you're right though. Yeah, flying cars. I don't know what I need. I need to be Back to the Future 2, I guess. So, yeah, and that was all flying cars.
A time machine.
Well, whatever.
All right.
We've gone down this time hole long enough. Sonia, any final words before we go?
Bye.
Bye, everybody.